I'm Richard Porter.
I'm Johnny Smith.
And this is Smith & Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars and many other things.
We didn't win an award the other day, which is...
What?
Which is not a surprise.
What, at the BAFTAs?
No, not at the BAFTAs. I got invited to an awards, the Auto Car Awards. Which is like,
oh, yes.
You know, that the magazine that was established in 1895, all about cars.
What, Britain's oldest motoring magazine?
Yes.
About motoring.
Horseless carriage motoring. Reviews. Exactly.
Motoring.
So I went there and for an evening, and it was fun. And got to speak to lots of people. What?
I like the way you did the obligatory rise in pitch when you
it
said
was
the word
fun.
It
sound a
it
bit
was
like,
fun.
A bit like when Tim Henman used to have the post-match interview in tennis. Yeah, and I decided to serve. And,
but that's because he had one of those bus gearbox voices, didn't he?
Oh, that's right. A bit of a Leyland Leopard.
So you went to the Autocar Awards, which was at Silverstone.
Silverstone. Yeah, so... Yeah, it's one of those things where if you leave the wing building in the evening and you say you'll meet your cab at the main entrance to Silverstone, that's possibly an hour's walk. I mean, you can get completely lost in Silverstone. Even people that work in Silverstone don't know how to get out. It's incredible.
It's like the Barbican Centre in London, which there are people in there who went in 1986 and they still haven't found their way out.
I just popped in
to see a Derek Jarman film, and now I have to live here for life. Did you? Because on even
there's
a
Crystal
Grand
Maze
Prix,
in there somewhere, I'm sure. You have Jonathan Palmer instead of Richard O'Brien, or somebody like that.
Yes, I've tried to get out of Silverstone on a Grand Prix day and found myself essentially walking the perimeter of the whole place by accident.
Yeah. It's true, isn't it? You do a significant amount of steps, and well, we all need to, I know, but it's just when you do it unprepped, so you're wearing perhaps a little bit too tight smart shoes, or you haven't packed any water, or all of those things. If you have to do an impromptu long walk, but yeah,
so they didn't. Do they not know who you are? Did they not send your car out to the door?
No, I'm talking bullshit, really. Of course, I did get taken via an electric Kia back in and out. But it reminded me of the time when I once had to walk from the wing building to the main gate to meet someone delivering a car, and it did take me 3/4 of an hour.
So I've been to Silverstone quite a few times, and I simply cannot orientate myself to where the wing building is relative to the main entrance.
I think they keep
just
moving
it. Can't stitch the... I think they do as well. It's on casters. No one's noticed, but the wing building is on casters.
No, it's a train on a railway. So it goes around. You know, like the moon orbits the... Hang on, which does what? You know, like the Earth orbits the sun and the moon orbits the Earth while it's orbiting the sun or something. Yeah. It's exactly like that. That's what it is. So the track moves a little bit, and there's a rail system around the edge of the track with all the stadiums and the. So every time you go in, I'm sure the wing building was a little bit on the left to the entrance. Oh no,
yeah,
it's on the right this time. What's going on?
Yeah. And no one wants to mention it because they think they sound crazy.
Yeah,
it wasn't the wing bit at the other end last time.
Well, you also don't. You sound like someone that's never been to Silverstone. And if you're well-informed, if you're a well-informed motor enthusiast, you just go. You can't possibly admit to someone, I got no idea how to get around Silverstone. No idea.
That's
at
what
all.
They're banking on, isn't it? Everyone wants to look like a proper motorsport enthusiast. Yes. They're not going to go, why is... No, hang on a minute. The sun rose over the other side last time. What are you talking
That's
about?
That's right.
Of course it didn't. Don't be daft. You'd actually be telling me you don't know who Jackie Stewart is.
It's an impossible track to learn because they change all the corners every day or every week, a bit like tide times. They sort of change.
Yeah.
So you think you know where Maggots is, but you don't because it's gone.
No.
And it's gone somewhere else. So it's a bit like I remember going for a ride out in a P1 powerboat once, offshore powerboat, for a feature that I had.
What, around Silverstone?
Yeah, it was around Silverstone,
so they can.
Yeah.
So it's like It's like one of those Olympic swimming pools that then they can sort of make a football pitch motorise over the top of it.
That's exactly it. They just it's peeled actually, it
Silverstone
back.
is a system of canals that they can just pull tarmac covers over the top.
They just pull a tarmac rug over
Imagine
the top.
How much it costs to build Silverstone. Jeez, millions, billions.
Yeah, but it's all okay.
Have you told me about this before, the P1 powerboat? Did you tell me that it was just brutal, like being inside a tumble dryer?
It was terrifying. Yeah, completely terrifying. It was way, way more scary than any race car or sort of unhinged road car I'd ever been in. Way more. And the reason why I'm saying it is because the Silverstone track, I think, does change all the time and all of the surrounding buildings. And it's a bit like racing on the sea. You can't learn a line or a corner, clip an apex, or whatever, because the sea's constantly rising and falling, and there's mare's tails and all sorts. So swells.
Mare's tails.
Yeah, I think that's what they call them, wasn't it? You know, where there's a little bit, where a wave breaks a little bit, but not a lot, and it creates a bit of white water. That's just a bit of a mare's tail, I think.
I've never heard that before.
Oh, I might have made it up. I'm now questioning it on a global platform. So
I would defer to a salty sea dog such as you who lives near Stamford.
I was going to say a landlocked town. I'll ask C6 Steve next time I hear him strumming away on his homemade banjo.
Okay, so anyway, how were the Autocar Awards?
Yeah, it's good. Saw lots of people that I haven't seen for a while, and it was interesting to see what cars won what. So I've actually got a copy of it, of the awards. I predicted one of them very quickly, and I was quite pleased with myself for that. I predicted, I think it's called a Future Classic Award.
I don't remember seeing this one.
I can't remember the exact terminology. Hang on.
Future classic. So a car that you can buy new now, but they're tipping as a future classic.
Yeah, car you can buy now, and but yeah, what
was it? Was it the M5 CS?
No, that did win an award though. That won quite a big award, but it wasn't that. No.
Well, it's quite a big car.
It is quite a big car. It's actually a very big car. Here we go. Future classics. We announce blah, 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 blah. So, yeah, these are judged most likely to achieve treasured classic status over the next 50 years, but they're cars that are on sale right now in 2022. So, have a think. I guessed one of them straight off the bat. I don't believe one of them's true, and the other three I'm cool with.
Ooh, so... Future classic. I don't know. GR Yaris.
Yes, there you go. Boom, straight in. GR Yaris, right in the middle there.
BMW M2.
No
competition.
But there is a BMW in there.
Oh,
there is a BMW in there. So that's lukewarm, Richard. Lukewarm.
There is a BMW, but it's not.
i3, the car good. That's yes, fantastic, but it's taken people a long time to work out how amazing it is.
Yeah, and well, it's Audi A2 syndrome, isn't it? People cotton on to the idea of it just as they stop making it, so
it completely
maybe
is
after.
Yeah, isn't it?
And there's another one
you got, and the one I guessed straight away, I almost shouted it out at the table, and I was right next to, I've got to say this because it's relevant, our table, I was a guest of Kia, and the table next to us was the big Stellantis table right at the front.
A lot of glow sticks.
Oh, loads.
Could
the
you
table
put the cap
massive
back on that Vicks, please? It's putting me off my food.
Oh, yeah, they were chucking poppers around. But the thing is, it felt like a Eurovision party before Eurovision. Because every event they do is Eurovision. It's just brilliant. Glamour.
Had they brought some executives from all across their empire?
They hadn't brought many, no. But I saw a couple of people doing backflips, which is always a surefire sign that there's a Mardi Gras going on, isn't there?
Yeah. But, with a lot of Euro specs.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
There was a lot of glasses with green, the green, the frame around the lenses is green on the arms. One's red and one's blue. United. They're being worn by a middle-aged man.
It's United colours of Benetton spec. It's exactly that. Yeah.
I saw some incredible Euro specs the other day, which were... So, there were circular glasses, but then each circular lens was then framed by a metal square.
What?
If you can imagine that. A circle within a square.
You've got...
The arms sort of came off the side of the squares. And it's just like, no one in Britain... would even consider, even an architect or a fashion designer would not consider buying those glasses, but someone who lives in Luxembourg, that's all they can buy in their local optician. It's just they were absolutely classic Euro specs.
I think the Eurovision spec contest would be far more entertaining than the Eurovision Song Contest, do you not?
Next up, we have Dieter. Dieter is wearing some unbelievably thin rectangular glasses, but they're so wide they extend about an inch either side of his head, and they're made of purple acetate.
It's so true. Next up, Henning from Germany. Now, Henning's got an enormous and completely circular head, but his glasses lenses are no bigger than a 20 pence piece.
And they are actually the shape of a 20 pence piece as well.
Oh, yes, they are.
With exquisitely thin arms.
Piano string arms.
Yes.
Henning is also profusely sweating, but that's not part of the contest. So yeah. We'll ignore that.
Also, from the front, he looks like completely shaven-headed, but at the back, he's got a tiny little pigtail on made of grey hair just sprouting from the back of his head.
Of course he has. And he's also, and the case of Henning's glasses is made of paisley, which is wonderful because we haven't seen that for many years.
Or some kind of non-authentic tartan.
Oh, yeah.
It's not affiliated with any clan.
It's a Euro tartan.
In Stuttgart.
Euro tartan.
Well, there's a whole avenue of, and if you look closely, probably Henning's shoes are made of Euro tartan as well.
They will be.
100%. And he's the director of steering systems for Mercedes-Benz.
We need to do Eurospecs Vision. It would just be amazing.
The Eurospec Song Contest.
I just think it'd be amazing. Or it is just European Vision. It's just... It beats, I don't know, a furious contest of like auto-dimming headlights systems and equivalent matrix lights fought between the OEMs.
Somewhere just outside Lille, they're currently recording a podcast called Smith A. Sniff, where they're laughing heartily about a trip to the UK and how boring all our glasses are.
It's so true, so formulaic, and we keep buying grey and silver cars, sometimes black. But never anything else. Or Doom Blue, which I still laugh Doom every time I hear people buying Doom Blue cars. So
the third future classic from Autocar, since you've mentioned Kia, I'm going to say, was it the Kia Stinger?
Do you know what? I said that it should be, and I think it will be. So if someone wants to buy a car in the next couple of years that they think is going to be a very enjoyable but rare groove classic, it will be that. And I was talking, I just happened to be sat next to two of Kia's and Hyundai's top design people, and they were saying also in Germany the residual values of Stingers on the second hand market is really high, and it shocked even them, and they said it's because they don't sell very well. When they come up for sale on the second hand market, people launch themselves at them. So
well, I guess if you want one, you want one, don't you? It's sort of like, you don't blunder into it accidentally. They're one of those cars you very deliberately seek out. Yeah. I'm just doing one of my not good for audio dives into Auto Trader
of course
to see where Stingers are in this country. And of course, you don't want the diesel one, do you?
No. It has to be the GT.
I've never driven it. I'm sure it's okay, but no.
I have driven it, actually.
Is it all right?
Yeah, I think it is all right. But that's the point. Okay. It's like it's not going to be a car that you would buy as a sort of unusual, interesting, rare piece, talking piece. The car that I predicted is the Future Classic, as they would say in Norfolk, would be the Alfa Romeo Giulia Quad Fog. or four cheeses. And yes. I sort of blurted it out, and I think even Stellantis turned around and cocked an eyebrow at me. But I was like, it has to be.
Sort of blurted it out. Well, you know, just as the room went quiet for some reason.
Yeah, they were, because it was an awards do, so they were trying to drum up suspense, but instead I just sort of shouted what I was thinking. But yeah, so the Alfa Quad Fog, which is a glorious car and seldom seen. Mm. We've already gone over that. So yeah, that Alpine 110.
Ooh,
which
yes,
is,
of course.
Which is worthy, of course. Yeah, i3, yeah. Which is fantastic. Cornish Pirate Yaris and the Land Rover Defender.
Okay.
Which I disagree with. But anyway.
Yeah, I disagree with that because they're selling as many as they can make, which isn't very many at the moment, but I just don't think I'm sure it'll be respected as a, you know. I mean, sort of, you could say the same about the Discovery 4, that as time has ceased production and now you look back at it and go, great bit of design, really good car, did its job well. Yeah. So it's sort of got that on its side. But classic?
Yeah.
Depends how you define it, really, isn't it?
I think the people will just still want the ones like you've got. And they'll go, well, of course the new ones are far superior luxury car. By the way, I've lost count of how many times Jerry McGovern uses the word luxury in any quotes. It's getting a lot now.
It's becoming meaningless, isn't it?
There's a lot of luxury.
I can't remember what luxury actually means anymore. Is that a type of lizard?
I think there's two luxuries in most sentences. As soon as you add another luxury to an existing luxury, what happens there? Yeah.
Someone should buy him a thesaurus and then maybe he could find another word for luxury so he doesn't keep... He always says modern luxury though, doesn't he? Or reductive luxury. Or he often adds another word to it. A sort of...
reductive luxury.
Reductive. He loves the word reductive.
That's
and
a
he's
word
obviously
I never
told
use.
All of his designers to use the word reductive even though they probably aren't quite clear what it means. Because it can actually be a negative reductive.
Yeah, it can.
I mean, in his context, he means taking away unnecessary detail, which I understand. And you look at the new Range Rover or the new Range Rover Sport, which we'll come to in a bit.
Yeah, we will. Yeah,
and they're very minimalist by modern car design standards in their sort of surfacing.
That's
true.
But
reductive can also mean sort of, you know, taking out too much detail from an argument.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, of course, people are in poverty because they don't work hard enough. You go, no, you're being completely reductive about that. That's not the point. It's just, you know, it's one of those things where generally I associate it, until Jerry McGovern started using it in every sentence, I'd always associate it with as a negative thing. But he's
reductive.
Sort of tried to pull it back to the positive. Let's not get bogged down in Jerry McGovern. The cheapest Kia Stinger V6 on AutoTrader at the moment is $24,450.
Bargain. What do they start at?
25 grand.
50, 55?
I think
60.
Are they? Yes. Now, I guess maybe they.
Everybody go and buy a Stinger now. And if we all put them away, if I'm still doing barn find videos in, I don't know, 30 years, I'm just going to suddenly embark on a cluster of Stingers. And we'll.
Won't there be too many Stingers? You only really need one in a barn, otherwise it becomes like just that car.
Okay. Right. Nobody buys
weird
a Stinger.
On the,
I'm going to buy
I've
one.
Just go onto the Kia website and they do this thing now where when you look at their list of cars, each car has a star rating under it with a little number in brackets, like you would get on Amazon to show how many reviews it's had.
What, of their own
but
cars?
They've all got 5 stars. So the Picanto has got 5 stars from 884 votes.
What?
It's just exactly the way that Amazon would do it, but it's really interesting that a car maker would put this on its own website.
Well, they,
I guess it's what people are used to.
They do more e-commerce, don't they? They were one of the early adopters of buying a click and collect car.
It just looks like a fix because they've all got 5 stars.
Hang on, are we going back to Eurovision Song Contest? Have they just rigged their own contest? Have gone.
Yeah, and the votes from the South Korean jury. Oh, what?
Oh, wow.
19 out of 5. Well, thank you. It's unfair play. I mean, I don't know. I'd looking at these and I'm going, well, you know, they are all quite good, these cars, if you want a small car. A Picanto is quite a decent small car. The Stinger.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's only got 10 reviews. Bless it.
That's all 10 people
so
that
like
bought them.
They've deleted all of the other ones now. It's only you can only get the S, the turbocharged V6. The diesels and the 2-litre have gone. But, on the road, for a Stinger GTS 3.3, £43,305.
Gosh,
on the road.
Well, like I just said, can we all go and buy them? We all go and buy them. One, and we all make a decision on who does how many miles. So one of us has to do delivery mileage. One of us has to do 3,000 miles over the next 30 years. One of us has to do 20,000 miles and so forth.
What? And then someone, I'm afraid, you've got to do 250,000 miles so that everyone can go, actually, it's not in bad nick considering.
No.
And
not in bad nick.
But that just means they're basically... they're just going to have to ply the motorway network for the rest of their times.
I was sat next to the bloke that designed the Kia Stinger, actually. Are we having a good chat about what? Stingers?
Not designs Peter Schreyer.
Well, designs Peter Schreyer was one side, and the other side was a chap called Gregory... Now, what his surname? I don't know how you pronounce it. Hang on.
Oh, is it Guillaume?
Yes, Guillaume, because he's French. Yeah.
Did he actually design the Stinger then?
I believe so.
So you were between the man who designed the Stinger and the man who supervised him doing it?
Yeah, I was. And it was... I had a really good time chatting to them both because I'm always a bit nervous with sort of accomplished designers that they constantly get asked the same things and maybe they can't be bothered to talk about cars because that's all they do. We got chatted about lots of different things. But, of course, you forget... With Peter, he designed so many cars that were really memorable. And I actually said to him, "Have you ever bought one of your own car designs, like a TT or a New Beetle, as was in the late 90s, or an Audi A2, or whatever?" And he said, "Actually, I haven't, but he said I quite fancy it. I said, I bet you'd be really fussy with the spec." Of which one? And he said, "Yes, I would. I'd be really fussy." And so I'd like to go car shopping with Peter Schreyer, secondhand car shopping, of going, because you've interviewed designers and stuff, haven't you, Richard? It must be odd seeing your own cars out in the wild, knowing people have paid money for them and they like them, and either praising them, the ones that you see for the way they've been configured and chosen, or the opposite. Putting your head in your hands and going, "Can't believe you've put those wheels on it, or you've ordered it with that colour interior, it's gash."
I think there's something else about being a car designer, and I have talked to designers about this, is the time between you signing off that design and it actually appearing on the roads where you can just come around a corner and see one.
Yeah.
Is even in the modern age of, you know, quite quick development times and everything, it's still, you're talking years.
Yeah.
So I remember, I can't remember who this was, a designer said to me, you know, sometimes almost just like by the time it comes out, you're almost bored of it because you're so familiar with it and you've seen the clay in the studio for weeks and weeks and months and you know, probably
so
been to design reviews. And it's just not new. So it when it comes out and everyone's going, "Oh, look at that new whatever," you're going, "What, that 3 or 4 year old thing?" Because you've lived with it for so long. It's almost one off. But that would drive me nuts. It's bad enough. A review I wrote came out just a few days ago. But I feel like I wrote it about 2 months ago. Probably did. And I was a bit like, "Oh, that. Oh, God." And then you go in and reread it. And maybe it's just me and my ego. But I always reread stuff when it's published to see what the sub-editors have done to it and whether I need to have a stampy foot tantrum about them or whether I've done something where I kind of go, "Oh, fuck's sake, why did I say that?" But that's just one thing where, you know, maybe sometimes occasionally a sub will have cut something for length and I'll be a bit cross about it. But as a car designer, you see one of your designs and someone specced it terribly and that can happen over and over again and you can be like, "Oh, why have they done that?" I find it quite hard to bear in a way. You just want to go up and go, "Why?
Why did you do that?
Non-metallic black, it looks terrible in that. You've lost all the detail. What's wrong with you?"
See, I don't like metallic blacks. Funny you should say that. My wife owns a metallic black car, and before that she had a metallic black car because you couldn't order it in non-metallic black. But I don't like metallic black because I always think it looks like black with some dust in from a passing vehicle.
It's a ball ache to keep clean, isn't it?
Yeah.
I know this because our up's metallic black and it's just constantly dirty.
It just looks like I don't know, when the paint shop was gunning the paint on, someone accidentally opened a back window, and there's just a, you know, there was a farmer doing a bit of harvesting, and a bit of chaff blew in and sprinkled itself over the paint. You're like, oh shit.
I think it depends on the car maker and even the car and which factory it's come from, because I know what you mean, but some people do it very well. Recent Mercedes, certainly in the last 10 years, have had really lovely sort of oily, inky metallic blacks.
Oily.
Certainly on S-classes and E-classes.
Inky.
And I think they look great. Looks sort of really almost liquid when it's clean, which is never. But when it's near as damn it, it's good. So it's not... But I know what you mean. Sometimes it does just look like... Has someone spilt some sherbet on your car?
Yeah.
It looks very... You need dusting, so I just get a feather duster.
It's
out
pollen. The bees have just dropped a load of pollen on a lovely black car, and it's just dusted it slightly. Yeah, there were some cool, there were some nice people at the.
That sounds like a lovely evening.
Yeah. There was. I bumped into Gordon Murray coming back from the toilets.
Had you just been lightning himself?
But that's it. I did. I nearly said something, and I thought, I'm not going to stoop to that. I'm not going to stoop to that.
I'd leave it 5 minutes. I've just been on a weight reduction program. In there.
Awful.
did you have a chat with? Professor Gordon Murray.
I did. I'm just flicking through it now. He did win an award. He won the Mundy Award for Engineering. So
good.
Yeah, it was a nice bloke. Says some interesting SUV, electric SUV stuff to come from GMD.
Really?
Apparently. Not Gordon Murray Automotive, Gordon Murray Design. So I guess it's different. He's got a different hat on.
Speaking of which, have you seen this announcement that Volkswagen are bringing back the Scout brand? To make some electric SUV / pickup trucks.
Scout?
For the US. Scout.
Volkswagen?
Because it was, what's his face? International Harvester, wasn't
it? Yes, it was. It was.
Make farm equipment, but also made these really quite cool looking, and I think quite sought after SUVs, 4x4s.
They totally live in the shadow of the original Bronco. But they're the same ilk and quite small, like the original Bronco. And I really... The IH Scout is a fantastic little car. Well, and not that long ago, they were really affordable. I think they've probably risen because of the whole kind of smaller, hardcore off-road resto
modding
thing.
I bet they're going for big money now because they're... Yeah, here we go. 1970 International Scouts, 44,900 in dollars. Oh. I mean, it's quite a lot for it. This is sort of Defender territory, isn't it? Where you just go, once upon a time, this would have been like a sort of $8,000 car. There is one here. There's a 1980 one. God, they still made them in 1980.
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
This is one of these ones. It's like the Grand Wagoneers. They kept making them into the 80s, but they still look the same as they did when they came out, pretty much.
I think, didn't they make them into the 90s?
I think they did. I think it was like 91, wasn't it? Yeah.
You imagine buying one of those in 1991. It's a bit like,
I wonder what it felt like. Probably extremely terrible at that point, but then, you know, then time is kind, isn't it? And sort of, they start to sort of come back again.
Oh, yeah. I love that back window in the Scout. It's got a really interesting kick up the back window, which reminds me of a Reliant Scimitar GTE.
Yes.
Which I'm very keen on.
Now,
imagine a Reliant Scimitar body on a Suzuki Vitara chassis. Basically that.
Well,
brilliant.
It's funny you mention this, because...
Guys,
we briefly talked about the new Range Rover Sport, which was announced the other day.
Sports.
I think the design of that car, and I haven't seen it in the real life, so I'm just basing this on the pictures. But I don't think it works as well as the new Range Rover full size, because somehow it feels like that reductive reductiveness that Jerry McGovern's always on about. it's almost like it's too. There's too little to it on the Sport somehow. Maybe that kind of big open unfettered surfaces works better on the big guy, but not so much when you shrink it down a bit. But the thing, the real problem I have with that car is that the number plates look too low.
Yeah, you said this, and it's true, especially at the back.
Well, I thought your observation about it looking like a max power car from the 90s was bang on when they used to relocate the plates on courses there and things.
Oh, it was rife, the plate relocation scheme. It was, you had to just put it somewhere apart from where it was.
Mm.
And it almost became obsessive in the world of car modifying. You're like, put it somewhere else. Just do it now.
put it on the roof on a plinth, like on a van. One of those old vans with big back doors.
Well, people used to, if you were going to do it properly, you'd grind out a recess, a number plate recess from another vehicle, like a van, you know, that had double doors at the back, and you'd take the recess pressing and you'd let it in to the tailgate of, I don't know, a Clio or bloody something hell. Like that. And you could do it off centre. So there was sometimes really good engineering and stuff gone into it, but other times it was just a hideous mess.
Well, I can remember seeing some cars like that where they'd filled in the number plate recess on the tailgate, but then the plate was just sort of crudely screwed to the bumper, sort of bottom left or something, and it always just looked, they hadn't made any effort. But they made the effort to fill in the recess, but then stopped there, and it looked a bit gash.
Well, then it looks like you're running on trade plates temporarily, doesn't it? But the other thing is about, you know, like you're saying, I'm actually looking at a picture of the Range Spalt now. It's because of it being a little bit high or low, I actually can't work out. It's a bit like when somebody smiles and they don't have many front teeth. you look and you go, oh, I can't say anything, but it doesn't quite look right because you're missing most of your teeth. I think there's a bit of that going on with it, Spalt. Also, I'm looking at the front of it, and I need to put a picture of a normal Range Rover next to it to work out the difference, because on the face of it, I can't quite work out the difference.
The headlights on the Sport look very slender to me. And although the new Range Rover, the headlights have got slimmer than they were on the old one, they're still quite big. They're very, very slender on the new one. And the taillights, this is what I was going to say. You mentioned the Scimitar GTE. When I looked at the back of the new Spalt when I first saw the pictures, I was immediately reminded of the Scimitar GTE. And there's no logical reason. That. I think it's just the relationship between the back lights and the plate. That's like a sort of reductive luxury, modernist, reductive Scimitar GTE.
Do you know what? Can somebody start making... We're in a world now where people are offering lots of turnkey resto mod type things. Can somebody just go for it with Reliance Scimitars?
Yeah.
For British luxury.
I think that's probably quite a solid business model if you could get the interest of a very high profile customer, you know, maybe a royal or something. Is that too ambitious?
Harry Styles.
Oh, Harry Styles. He'd do it, yeah.
So look, he's a bit out there, right? But if you pitched it right and you did it right, you know, like say if somebody like Retro Power said, right, we're going to reimagine the Climacher. And we're gonna give it to some influential people.
Influential.
So you'd have Harry Styles with the Scimitar, and then you'd have a couple of other people. And I think it could look fantastic. You could EV one. You could have one with a modern piston, you know, turbo motor or something. It could be amazing, and could be quite light and efficient. So fun in dynamically fun. So I'm getting the feels for a Reliant Scimitar and
a Scimitar resto a reinvention for Harry Styles.
Whoever does the presentation obviously has to have a bit of a speech impediment and constantly use the word scimitar but never the word Princess Anne ever.
Who?
Yeah, exactly. So, but you could have a PA edition, which we don't. It's not referenced of what where the term comes from. It's just people that know just keep shtum.
Yeah,
they nod and take notes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The PA edition, the Chimeter PA. And that's almost like the RS version, it's the PA.
The RS.
Isn't it? I think one thing about the double R spout that has interested me is it looks like it's going to get a decent FEV system. Looks like it's going to get... I was reading... Where is it? It was here somewhere.
It's the same one that's in the big Range Rover, so it's got a huge battery on it.
38 kilowatt hour battery.
Mm, they reckon about 70 miles of EV driving.
Yeah, 70 miles of EV only, so that even if that's 50, 60 in the real world, that's a decent chunk of electric power. Mm. So I'm glad of that. I forgot to say the best fun car. There's an award at the Autocar Awards for best fun car.
Fun.
What one best fun car?
Fun. Best fun car.
Fun.
Fun.
You must have fun in this car. Have fun. Please have fun.
What one best fun car?
Best fun car.
Fun. Not the Alpine.
No, although it could have. No, it could have, though, couldn't it?
Fun.
Fun.
Oh, God, what's
and it wasn't a hire car from Heathrow. And yes. To midnight.
it's a Hyundai i110. i110? What are they called? i10. With 18,000 miles on it. Smells a bit of, like, sort of fruit-based air freshener. Clutch is going, but amazing amount of grip considering it's on 165 tyres. I don't incredible. Know what the best fun car could be. I don't know. Was it the Renault 5 Gordini?
Yeah, every year it just wins it. Like Anton Deck with the television awards. It's like, not again. It's done it again. It's not even on sale anymore and it's still won. How's this possible? Anton Deck retired and they still get. They still win the television awards. It's like they've been retired for 15 years. What's going on? It's the Toyota Cornish Pirate 86.
Oh, of course.
And it's a car I haven't driven yet, and I'd very much like to.
Are they over here yet?
Well,
I mean, they've sold out, I believe.
Have they really?
Yeah, because the UK allocation, it went on sale and then immediately sold out. I think the allocation was in like 300 cars or something.
My gosh, so I feel a bit sorry for the Supra. Mm. Don't you? Because I don't think the Supra had that gold rush.
No.
Did it?
No. No, it's true. I'm just looking this up. Instant sellout in 90 minutes. Bloody hell. What? Oh, except, hang on. Well, now,
mushroom.
Wait. Now. Ha.
Now, guys.
Toyota themselves. The new Toyota GR86 has been an instant sellout with the entire UK allocation of cars being snapped up within 90 minutes of going on sale. Where does it say? It doesn't say how much the allocation was, though. So,
No, you're right. I can't.
And piston heads, learn to read press releases. They've said 40 minutes. That's not true.
No, that's less
than half. Even
Toyota
say that's not true. So, journalism.
It's under 30 grand. Yeah. That's probably why it's sold out. It's $5,000 cheaper than the cheapest Audi TT.
Yes.
That's quite a saving.
There was now, I was in a car park the other day.
You weren't.
I know, shocking. And
were you doing one of those covert wees where you're pretending to load the boot of a car?
No.
Okay. I'm just asking for a friend.
I did have to do a wee between two wheelie bins the other day, but that's a different story.
I had to do one at the Stansted Airport. I forgot to tell you about it. I always back my car into the right around the perimeter of a long stay car park. Always go to the far corner and reverse it in. Lift up the boot, pretending you're going to load a bag in, but what you're doing is you're having a desperate waz through the chain link fence. That's what you're doing. I'm not saying I've done it, but that's always the plan, just in case. That's what I'm saying. Anyway,
this is actually worse. I've just gone to Evo's report on the GR86 selling out, and they're able to read, so they've said it's 90 minutes to the allocation one. But this isn't just the 2022 allocation. This is the entire two-year production inventory.
Oh, my gosh.
After which sales will cease due to European safety regulations, which come into force in 2024.
My God, Toyota's becoming, like, the most charismatic, desirable...
It's car interesting, company. Isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And yet, yeah. I feel like at the moment, anyway, a lot of manufacturers who did have that kind of draw, a bit lukewarm.
Well, maybe. Honda have totally spunked all the sporting equity they had, haven't they?
Spunked. Yeah, they have.
NSX yeah. or not, but yeah. And I mean, suppose Civic Type R, and there's going to be a new Civic Type R, but somehow it just feels like... And Subaru, once, you know, synonymous amongst car people with things that were blue with gold wheels and rallying and all that, and now it's sort
It's sort of a bit high-waisted trouser, isn't it? No.
Yeah, it is. It's a bit... Yes.
But yeah, they could do something. They could bring it back. They really could. I hope they do.
Well,
but no,
you just got to put the effort in, haven't you? No one can tell me how much the allocation for the 2 years that we'll get that car.
Are you still looking? Just
well, it's bothering me now because I want to know how many cars. If they go, it's sold out in 90 minutes. How many cars was it? Seven. You'll go, well, I'm not surprised, but I'm imagining it's in the hundreds. I'd just like to know how many. Because that also dictates whether you'll ever be able to get one or if everybody's just going to sort of keep them, you know. It sort of feels like that if it's only a few hundred...
Could you do your best pirate GR86 introduction, please? Best fun car. As if, please, if you were
now
a pirate introducing...
To present...
please.
You, to present please. The award for best fun car... Please welcome on stage Silver John. And this man comes on, he's got one leg and an eye patch.
Of course.
Without further ado, it be Toyota GR 86.
Yeah,
Silver
exactly.
John's a stupid. I'm thinking of John Silver, aren't I? I completely blanked on the pirate.
Tis a Silver John.
Blackbeard. What other pirates are there?
Oh, be quiet in the room.
Warty Steve.
Tis a full moon tonight.
See, they've rolled back the tracks to reveal the Silverstone waterways so that sail up to the wing building.
That's exactly what happened. What a great... Yeah. It's not called the Black Pearl. It's called the pearlescent white...
the Doom Blue.
Lady Friend.
Blue
or
Doom.
Yeah.
It's a non-metallic boat. He wasn't prepared to pay the extra.
It was just base model, that's right.
Base model, a base model pirate ship.
Yeah, it's on hubcaps.
Steel. Sails.
Oh no, it has no cannons. It just has circular hubcaps, blanking panels where the
it's
cannons
got
would
loads
be.
Of blanking. Is this is
I
your
love that.
Is your tiller just plastic? You don't get the leather on this one.
Faux tiller.
So
it's got vinyl sails as opposed to real canvas, artisanal cotton canvas or whatever. It's just vinyl.
Now I'm reading an Australian website. Australian website is reporting that the GR 86 sold out in the UK. What a strange thing. They're reporting...
You're still talking about how many, aren't you?
So, now I feel guilty about having to go at Piston Heads in that this Aussie site says, in the UK, every example was snapped up on the same day with the buy now button disappearing after 90 minutes. However, a spokesman said the entire market allocation was spoken for within 40 minutes of order. So it's both.
Okay, here's what I want Toyota to do.
Now.
They're the masters, all right. They're the original masters of just in time mass production.
Mm.
Okay, so here's what's going to happen. Every single person that successfully ordered a GR 86 will get them on the same day, and there'll be a GR 86 day, won't there? So everybody is out. Right, let's say there's 5,000 cars. Should we just say there's 5,000? So on that day, all 5,000 cars will just appear on the road. You automatically have to take a day off, or you're allowed a day off.
Or they leave it behind the bin.
Yeah, that's right. And you're allowed to drive the streets. And if you want to fly a skull and crossbones flag, you can. It's entirely up to you. But you can. And also, you know, like... large ships get chaperoned by a small tugboat or a...
Yeah, it's
a pilot
boat. Maybe.
Is it a pilot boat?
If we're going into a harbour, it might be, I think.
It could be, just in case it crashes into other stuff and doesn't see it. Like a spotter boat. The spotter boats for the GR 86 will be the GR Yaris crew. Everyone with a Yaris is allowed to chaperone the GER 86. And it becomes this amazing day of GER.
Day of GER. GER Day.
GER Day.
GER Day.
Don't you think that could work? So, Toyota, can you ramp up your production? Get them all PDA'd on the same day.
Well, let me tell you. Now, this may be bollocks. It's on a forum. It's on the GT86 Owners Club forum that someone says...
Someone.
So, yes, that reliable source of information, someone from a forum, says there are 400 cars coming to the UK for 2022.
Is that all?
In some European countries, it's as low as 50. So
they've instantly made it more exclusive, more desirable, more talked about than the Supra.
Well, yes, by a mile. But also, I think probably this, if it's not Autocar's permanent future classic going forward, I'll be surprised, because it's got rarity on its side, and I think that's always helps, and it's quite good by all accounts. So we looked at this before, didn't we? Remember, ages ago we looked up what prices of GT86s were at, and they hold their value, don't they? So
yeah, they do. They're also going to be the for a younger generation, they'll be the MX-5. They already are, kind of, you know, that so many, mostly men I talk to who are under 23, they've always got an MX-5. Always.
Really?
Yes, like a prerequisite.
I don't buy that, because I think a lot of men perceive the MX-5 as being a little effete and a little not manly, and they go hot hatchy.
No, that's an older generation.
Do you think?
That's our generation and the one just below us.
Right. Yeah. What are we? We're Gen X. Actually, you might not be. Are you Gen something else? Are you a millennial?
No, I'm not a millennial, I don't think. Z? Gen Z.
Well, I'm a Gen X, but I think you're...
I'm 77. I was born in 77.
Gen X then, aren't you? I don't know where the boundaries lie. I mean, who decides anyway? It's sort of...
Well, that's the thing. Who does decide? I'm the run-out model.
Do you understand how to text message? Yes. Okay, well, you're this then.
I'm the run-out model, so I'm...
Yeah.
They throw
Can
all
you operate
of the extras
your mobile phone with one hand, or do you have to hold it with one hand and tap at it with the other one? All right, you're a baby boomer.
I can do both.
How big is the typeface on the screen of your smartphone? Is it like one character per screen? You have to swipe across to read words. Okay, yeah, you're definitely a baby boomer.
Dirty boomer.
So
there we go, the old 2.4 GER 86, not 2 litre anymore.
I don't know if they're in the country yet. I don't know if we'll ever get a chance to drive one, but it looks jolly nice, and it's sold out. So it's sort of, I mean, if I were Toyota, I probably would go, well, there aren't any press cars, because we're just going to sell them to people with actual money.
Well, why not these days? Out,
so why waste our time with people who are just going to do idiotic things until the tyres are bald and then hand it back?
The other thing I saw, which was interesting, was my first right-hand drive Chevrolet Corvette Stingray.
Oh.
It was on display, because, of course, you can get that in the UK now. And
yeah.
I hadn't looked at a C8 in detail. It is a C8, isn't it?
Yeah,
C8. And it's a pretty wild-looking beast.
I don't like the exterior design of it at all.
Is it too busy? Is it
too busy,
much?
Too dated, too sort of... it looks like a poor quality rendering of what people thought a mid-engine Corvette might look like 15 years ago to me. It's just not... I don't know. Now, to drive...
Listen.
I was talking to a chap the other day who's got a 458 Speciale, one of the greatest cars ever made. A glorious car. And he owns one, the bastard. And he's driven that Corvette, and he said bits of it reminded me of my 458 Speciale, and I was like, what? I'm sorry. And he went because I think he said, I didn't expect the V8 in the Corvette to rev the way it does, and it's got a real sort of good all of a piece feel to it. And he said I was just blown away by it. So it was really impressive. He's not saying it is like a 458 Speciale, but he went, it reminded me more of that car than I ever would have expected. It's good. He was really impressed by it. But I think also it's when you come in expecting not much, I suppose that always helps to be impressed by something, maybe. I don't know.
Definitely.
I gather it's good. I think, who have I seen review? Oh, Jethro Bovington. I've seen, he's reviewed it, and he said it was pretty good. And, you know, he's a Tillerman of some repute. So
He is a Tillerman. Yeah,
I'd be interested
in
to
the
try
black,
that.
In the white pearl, or the doom blue. Yeah.
Arr, he be a Tillerman of some repute.
of some repute. Some rebuke. Yeah, I feel like it should still be front engined. That's all I'm saying. I feel like just as the Corvette has matched all of its peers, or its European peers, as it were, or Japanese peers, I feel like it's lost a bit of its USP. And if you've ever drove one of the last front-engined Corvettes, it's a hell of a car.
Yeah, they got quite good, didn't they?
Really, really good. And, you know, just say what you want about, I guess, some of the switch gear or whatever, but you've got to look at what these things sell for.
Yeah.
And the engines are utterly legendary. The GM V8s are almost more iconic than Ferrari engines in some ways. You've got to look at like what it does, how much power it can put out, how robust it is. All this stuff is, I think, really impressive.
I know so, that yeah,
I've never owned a Corvette, but
no, me neither.
I'm down with it.
They're a hard one to pull off in the UK, aren't they?
I just they think, are.
You know, they make you look a bit. I don't know. Like there's something wrong with you. You're a bit too into American things. Just move to America. Just move to America.
Yeah, I'd probably go for a Monaro, so I'd have the American heart, but it would just be a little bit more. I don't know, a little bit more.
Australian.
Something. Yeah. Yes, it would be Australia, but you know what I mean. I've always had a thing for the Monaro.
Yes, it's because they're fun.
The VXR8 has a little bit of sort of early 2000s max power about it, which I never felt worked as well as the Monaro.
Because I had a VXR8 as a long-termer from Evo, and I really liked it, to the point where I looked into buying it when its time was up. But unfortunately, Vauxhall wanted a lot of money for it. Unsurprising, it's their car. They can ask what they want.
Were you expecting them to give you, $13,000?
I don't think I ever used this argument with them, but I felt like nobody really wants these cars, so I'm sure they'd appreciate like billy-o. But obviously, it's in Vauxhall's interest to maintain a sturdy resale value, so they sort of wanted almost what it would have been new, and I hadn't got that kind of cash lying around, so off it went. But yeah, it was a lovely car. Really not. I mean, it's just like not a good car in the sense of it being as polished as a BMW or something, but just a really likeable car, like a big, friendly cartoon bear.
Yeah. So shall I get a Monaro VXR at some point, and you get a the other one that I've completely forgot the name of?
VXR8. Yeah.
Yeah, that one. I just want to call it a Senator, but yeah, that one.
Ooh. Yes, yeah. I know what you mean about the Max Paris. I looked into having the rear spoiler. There's in Australia, you could get a low line rear spoiler, which was just basically a lip.
A lip. That would be perfect.
Well, I went to see up at Walkinshaw's place in Oxfordshire. They had the sort of official HSV kind of concessionaire, whatever you call it, that was part of Tom Walkinshaw's operation.
Concessionaire.
And they put a noisier exhaust on it for me. The guy who ran it was an Aussie guy, and I said to him, I was also wondering about having the low line spoiler on it, and he basically called me a softy, but in a slightly more robust and rude Australian way.
Did he go, "Don't be a prick, mate"?
It was basically that, like legit. Yeah. He's the guy who ran this operation, and I was a journalist visiting his premises, and he called me a prick or something like that. Yeah, he just went, "What's the point? Why would you do that?" Because I just like the look of it more. Nah. So that I didn't pursue that one. But it was, yes, lovely car. Really lovely car. What were we talking about? Oh, Corvettes. The Corvette.
Sweet.
It's funny because.
Lovely, lovely.
Actually, if you look at. They've obviously gone, oh, mid-engined. We've got to do that because that's what all serious performance cars are.
Exactly.
And I remember in the mid-80s, we went to Canada to visit our relatives there. And my dad bought me a copy of Road and Track or Car and Driver. I can never distinguish the two. And it had, on the cover, these illustrations of the mid-engine Corvette. It's coming at last. Mid-engine Corvettes are here. Yeah, look out, everybody. Mid-engine Corvettes for the 80s. And it's like, this is a story that's been going for longer than that as well, I think. Probably.
Yeah.
Probably sort of since, I don't know, Americans would be able to set us straight on this, but I'm pretty sure the idea of mid-engine Corvette has been around for a long, long time, and they've finally come good on it. But actually, all Ferrari's flagship cars now, unless you go into the sort of limited run stuff, they're front engine, aren't they? They're F12s and all that malarkey there.
Yeah, so why... And also, so, I guess you could look at Aston Martin. They've been pushing the engine further back for years. And I think that's okay. Corvette got so good at it. I don't know. By ripping it up and starting again, I think they've done a great job engineering-wise, but like you say, looks-wise, does it just look like a sort of knockoff of an NSX?
Is it? How big does it look in real life?
It's quite big. Mm. It's very Transformers-y. You do expect the sort of you do expect the sharp chiseled kind of front and rear wings to turn into shoulders and elbows of a robot. That's one thing I did think, and I don't think I'd be comfortable driving it in terms of the way I looked. Although I shouldn't really give a shit about what people think, but it's always in the back of your mind.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking. I don't want to transmit my midlife crisis that loudly.
No.
It's my problem with Corvettes in Britain. I think it's probably different in the US. I don't know. I think the image in the US is probably a whole different kettle of issues. But anyway, we'll...
Well, I'm not going to be buying one, but I would like to very much drive one, the same as a Cornish Pirate 86 off of the White Pearl Essent base model.
Now, hey, listen, guys, look.
There was something else I was supposed to say today.
Well, just very quickly, we should start fastening our seatbelts ready for landing. But before we do, speaking of the Americas, we had an email from a listener who signs his name Earl. He says, I'm worried this email will come off as a bit rude, but I swear it is only curiosity. A couple of weeks ago, Johnny mentioned he disliked air conditioning and instead opted to tilt the sunroof. This isn't the first time I've heard a Brit have a similar sentiment, so I have to ask, why is that? I'm from Alabama, where it's already starting to get up into the 90s some days, so the idea of someone thinking that air conditioning isn't one of the most important human inventions is very odd. Love the show, Earl.
Because I'm a firm believer in acclimatisation. If you live in a place where you can't handle the natural climate, then you're A, a pussy, or B, you shouldn't be there.
So because Earl's apologised for coming across rude when in fact his email wasn't rude at all, and now you've just been extremely rude to him.
I try because when you get out of a car that's been air conditioned and you... I don't know, you climb out and you walk out into wherever you're going and it's suddenly like, oh my gosh, it's so hot. You burst into perspiration if it's particularly hot because you haven't acclimatised. It's all about acclimatisation. Makes you a tougher person, makes you have a better immune system, makes you a more resilient being.
Yes, but...
So on that basis, I don't do air con.
It's already gone over 30 degrees centigrade.
So you drink a shitload of water?
No, it's just too hot. I mean, that's inhumanly hot. We've had this conversation not on air before, because you always turn the aircon off in cars,
always.
Whereas I just tend to press the auto button and let the car decide what it wants to do, because
no,
I feel like
it's just power
a lot
robbing.
Of people have spent a lot of time. It's true. Do you know, I have started turning the aircon off in my e-up, because it's amazing how much extra range it seems to think it'll give you. So fair enough, because I realise don't need it. But like in my... Other cars. Who could be other cars? Actually, my Defender doesn't have air conditioning, but in the Range Rover, it's like somebody spent a long, 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 long time calibrating the climate control in that car.
Yeah,
it's like, because it drives me nuts. My wife always fiddles with air conditioning systems.
Oh yeah, you said this. You can never settle.
Fiddler. Yeah, she was doing it the other day. We drove over to Bath and back in over a weekend, and all the way there, she was just titting about with the different elements of the climate control, including the Range Rover's got one of those, you know, the little wheel underneath the central vents that you can have either fresh air or whatever's coming from the climate control, which is a nice feature. But she's forever just, once I explain to her what it was, she's forever fiddling with it. And then going, can you turn yours up a bit? Because I'm getting a bit of your draft. I'm like, no, I'm perfectly comfortable. Why do I have to suffer? Because you have some kind of lizard blood that's never warm. It's just so. Anyway, but I thought, as a whole team of people in Land Rover, we've spent a long, long time sorting that out, as there is in every car company, getting the auto setting, which, you know, they used to be a bit bollocks, but now I think they're really good. Really good aircon systems. You put them on auto, you tell it to make you, I don't know, 20 degrees. And you're just comfortable all the time. Well, I am.
Anyway, it's obviously a personal choice. I can't control everybody, and I don't want to control everybody. but I think the power robbing nature of it bothers me. It's just an extra belt in the engine which pisses me off, and an extra thing to drive.
But then, so if you're,
I don't ever use
aircon
in any of my cars. I turn them on
ever
I turn them on for maybe an hour before an MOT to make sure that nothing is seized.
Oh,
that is the only time. I only ever use the aircon to make sure it doesn't stop working. But I would order every car without air conditioning, and it annoys me that you can't delete them, especially on stuff that's high performance. That annoys me. Like, if I wanted a GT3 911, I don't want aircon. I never want aircon with it.
Oh, but you
get rid of the belt.
Particularly in those buckety seats in those, you get a very sweaty back.
Yeah, but it's part of the appeal for me. I want to be a barbarian of the tarmac and get
going
a little
to
bit...
a meeting in a blue linen shirt and then sorry, everybody. You have to out of the meeting at the end because you've got a very wet back still from
I want to
driving
get out
GT3
glistening.
There.
You get out all glistening, and I maybe it's because I'm fortunate. I'm going to end this now, don't worry, I'm not going to keep talking. I'm going to end this now by saying I think I'm fortunate enough to be one of those people that could probably sweat all day and I don't smell.
Oh.
I'm not one of these people that gets a little
bit
of vinegar. I knew you'd say, are you sure?
Never been aware of you stinking in all the time I've known you, but there's a lot of people I could say that about, but I've never probably known that they weren't running the aircon in their car. I don't know. Anyway, there you go, Earl. The reason is that Johnny is unusual and he doesn't smell. Personally, if I was in Alabama at this time of year, I would be cranking that AC and ventilated seats if they'd got them.
Ah, now ventilated seats, different story for a different day.
No, what? Hang on a minute. Well, no, this is a total double standard. Talk about adding weight and complexity to a car. I'd never seen the appeal of ventilated seats until I got into a car with a friend of mine in Los Angeles in the summer. And the first thing he did is put his vented seat on. I was like, oh.
They're more successful at kind of unsticking the bag, as it were, more than just chilling the air that goes in my mouth. Don't want the air to go in my mouth. It's really artificially chilled. But, like, you know, stopping the bag from sticking to the shorts or something, that's got more use. Sorry, should we bring this cast into
tray
land?
Tables away.
You said you had a bit of a claggy throat.
I've done all right because I have a cold and I'm very claggy. But it's amazing I've not been Bob Fleming throughout this whole recording. Before that happens, let's just stop. Ending with three things that I have to tell you. They are, one, Johnny has a solo YouTube channel. It's called The Late Bake Show, in which he realises he's got guests coming around and decides to make a cake.
We've only got an hour.
It doesn't come out well. If that's not up your street, then there's always the Late Break Show, which has got lots of excellent car videos, including, I believe, coming up, a Tolman 205.
Yes, the 205 Peugeot GTI Tolman edition, which, again, has a slightly claggy throat. It's that engine which does sound slightly gurgly, gargly, kind of like smoker in the morning idle.
Yeah. Second thing I've got to tell you is I have various books out. One of them is called Steel Flies by Roy Lanchester. It's a spoof Cold War thriller written by the fictional useless car journalist Roy Lanchester. It's full of florid descriptions and far too much detail about road numbers. And the third thing I've got to tell you is that if you enrolled this very week at the Ontario College of Art and Design, you might find yourself being taught by a professor of design called Dr. Martha Ladley. What you might not realise if you're under a certain age is that Dr. Martha Ladley is also Martha from Martha and the Muffins.
Seriously?
Yeah, she is now a Professor of Design, Ontario College of Art and Design.
of design.
Mm. So no word on where Echo Beach is, re its distance in time.
Yeah, great song. I like that. Yeah, it is a great song. A fourth thing to mention is come to the Late Break Show.
Oh,
big
yes.
Break car event this summer. It's in August, first week of August.
And it's, specifically, it is, and I'm just going to look this up now, it is the weekend of the 6th and 7th of August in Lincolnshire?
Yeah, well, just on the sort of Cambridgeshire border. It was basically just a couple of miles away from Peterborough in the countryside.
Okay.
And you can come on the Saturday or the Sunday or both if you're really keen. And we'll both be there. And there's going to be an enormous amount of cars.
Yep. And
there might be some silly pub quiz thing that Richard will write.
I'll do a quiz. We might have another thing, an interactive thing on stage. We'll do a Q&A, we'll do a chat, we'll do all sorts of stuff. There'll be special guests, or guests at least, won't there?
Yeah. Well, you never know. There might be a Reliance Scimitar reimagined there, if someone manages to cobble something together really quickly.
Yeah. Or maybe we'll just do it live on the day using ill-considered Heath Robinson arrangement of fiberglass moulds and MIG welders. MIG or TIG? I don't know. Which is your favourite?
Well, TIG is a far more specialist process that requires more training, lower temperature. So TIG for the pros, MIG for your everyman, I would say. But I'm not going to diss MIG because it's the common one.
Yeah, we'll decide nearer the time.
Too much information, I apologise.
Well, anyway, that's enough of all this. We'll do it again next week. But until then, thank you ever so much for listening. Goodbye.
Bye. It was almost a never-ending podcast, then, wasn't it? Just couldn't get it to land.
And then I copped it at the end. Thank you ever so much for listening.
The never-ending podcast. Ah.